All right, we're beginning on the top of Lamed Chet Amud Aleph by the two dots. Here the Gemara is discussing what the Mishnah had brought. There was a multi-tanae machloket in the Mishnah with regards to putting together a shvuah. When is it considered to be a general shvuah? When is it considered to be multiple shvuot? And that is because if the response of the individual was that a general shvuah is only chayav once. If the response is that he's taking a shvuah on each of the individual items, then he's chayav for each of those denials that he makes under oath. And so the language that you use is important, and the Mishnah brought a machloket, and the Gemara is about to bring a braita that seems to expand on that, and then we're trying to clarify what exactly are the differences between the opinions of the Tanaim. So Tan Rabbanan, halal, enu chayav el achat. If he did it in a generic, general way, the shvuah, then he's only chayav once. Parat, chayav al kol achat v'achat. Divi Rabbi Meir. If he details it, then he's chayav on every shvuah, on every detail that he mentions. The Mishnah mentioned a number of scenarios, just to remind ourselves. It had a case where you have five claimants, and then he's rejecting the claims of the five claimants. We had a case where there were different items, pikadon, shumet yad, gazel, aveda. And then there's also within the categories, Chitin, Seorim, Kusmin. So these are all the different types of Shavuot that we saw in the Mishnah, where there are multiple claims, and he's responding to those multiple claims. Rabbi Meir is difficult only because he gives us no information. He says if you do it in a generic, general sense, you only chayav once. If you detail it, you're chayav multiple times, but it doesn't define for us what's generic and what the parat is, and that the other Tanaim do, and then we have to back into what Rabbi Meir thinks. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Shwa lo lecha, velo lecha, velo lecha, chayav al kol achat v'achat. The Rabbi Yehuda says that he takes a shwa not to you, and not to you, and not to you, then you're chayav on each one of them. Seemingly, what Rabbi Yehuda is saying is, the vav chibur here is what makes it that you have multiple shvuot. So velo lecha, velo lecha, velo lecha is what generates the al kol achat v'achat. Now, the Amoraim will argue about how Rabbi Yehuda relates to Rabbi Meir, and then that will help us understand what Rabbi Meir thinks as well as what Rabbi Yehuda thinks. Rabbi Eliezer Meir, lo lecha, velo lecha, velo lecha, shvu'ah, chayav al kol achat v'achat. Rabbi Eliezer in the Mishnah just made one statement. He said you need the shvu'ah at the end. As opposed to having the shvu'ah in the beginning, you need it at the end. Over there, Rashi said, literally, you have to take the word shvu'ah from the beginning and move it to the end, so you know that everything beforehand is shayach to the shvu'ah. There is a view in the Yerushalmi that you need to have shvu'ah in the beginning and end, but here the Braita is very supportive of what Rashi said on the Mishnah, which is, Rabbi Elazar says, you say, lo lecha, v'lo lecha, v'lo lecha, shvu'ah. The shvu'ah comes at the end, then the shvu'ah applies to everything that you said before. Chayav al kol achat v'achat. So he needs the word shvuah to be at the end rather than in the beginning, and that's his key element of what makes it into a prat. Rabbi Shimon Omer, ad shimor shvuah l'kol achat v'achat. Rabbi Shimon's the clearest of them, which is that you need to use the word shvuah. You want multiple shvuot, you need to repeat the word shvuah each time. You can't apply the shvuah to other items or multiple items unless you repeat the word shvuah, and then each shvuah will be separate. So that is the braita that we have. Now we need to clarify exactly what are the views of each of these Tanaim. Alright. I'm Rabbi Yehuda, I'm Shmuel. Kololo shel Rabbi Meir, prato shel Rabbi Yehuda. Kololo shel Rabbi Yehuda, prato shel Rabbi Meir. Basically, what Rabbi Yehuda, I'm Shmuel says is, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir have the exact opposite positions. That means what Rabbi Meir thinks is a klal, Rabbi Yehuda thinks is a prat. What Rabbi Yehuda thinks is a klal, Rabbi Meir thinks is a prat. Now, part of that we can garner from the Braita. Again, the Gemara will explain Shmuel's position later on and how he got there. But just starting from the fact that Rabbi Yehuda argues and says, Shvuah lo lecha, velo lecha, velo lecha chayav, that means that he thinks that's a prat, and Rabbi Meir thinks it's not a prat. The fact that he says that indicates that that's where he's arguing. He's arguing on Rabbi Meir and saying this is a prat. That means he heard from Rabbi Meir that's not a prat, and that's why he's specifically mentioning this as being something that divides it up into separate shvuot. So that part of it we understand, which is the fact that he says shvua lo lecha v'lo lecha v'lo lecha, that's Rabbi Yehuda's prat, that means that that's Rabbi Meir's klal. Rabbi Meir thinks that that's all one big shvua. Now, what about the other side of this puzzle, which is, where does Rabbi Yehuda think you have a klal? Rashi explains this, and so does the Balei Tosafot. Masha Shama Rabbi Yehuda, Sheyose Rabbi Meir klal. Rabbi Yehuda is responding to what he heard from Rabbi Meir, which is a klal. Dainu below lecha, velo lecha. Asan Rabbi Yehuda, prat. Umimela Shmainan. And therefore then we're going to understand the pratosh Rabbi Meir, the prat of Rabbi Meir is hainu lo lecha, lo lecha. Because otherwise, how do you get a prat according to Rabbi Meir? Rabbi Meir needs a prat, a case where you divide it up. If we just determine that Rabbi Meir thinks shvua lo lecha, velo lecha, velo lecha is considered to be one shvua, not multiple shvuot, where is the case of multiple shvuot for Rabbi Meir? The only thing left, Rashi points out, is shvua, lo lecha, lo lecha, lo lecha. Without the vav, that's going to create a separation or a prat. So now, if that is considered to be the prat of Rabbi Meir, then that is the klal of Rabbi Yehuda. D.E. Because if you believe lo lecha lo Rabbi Yehuda nami prata, if Rabbi Yehuda also thought that vua lo lecha lo lecha lo lecha was also a prat, v'lo chashiva klal elish ein lachem, and the only way you can get to a klal we'll see later in the Gemara is when you say ein lachem, when you put everybody together in one shot, maishna v'lo lecha denakat. Then why do you only mention one of the two items where he thinks? Now, the Balei Tosafot say it's very simple. He only mentioned the item where he argued. He didn't mention the item where he doesn't argue. I mean, if Rabbi Meir believes shvua, lo lecha, lo lecha, lo lecha, without a vav is a prat, then Rabbi Yehuda comes along and says, I'll tell you what a prat is, shvua, lo lecha, ve lo lecha, ve lo lecha, ve lo lecha. So what Rabbi Yehuda did was, where I argue on Rabbi Meir, I'm explaining. Where I don't argue on Rabbi Meir, I don't need to mention it because I agree with him there. So the Balei Tosafot raised that issue against Rashi's explanation, but then they say, Rabbi Yehuda should have said af. That the lack of the word af is actually indicative of what Rashi says. Because if Rabbi Yehuda wanted to say, not only is shvua lo lecha, lo lecha, lo lecha a prat, but also shvua lo lecha, ve lo lecha, ve lo lecha, ve lo lecha is also a prat, he should have said af. Also this. The fact that he doesn't say also shows you that this is his unique case, where he says, shvua lo lecha, ve lo lecha, the vav, is what makes it into a prat. From that we conclude that the machloket Rabbi Meir Rabbi Yehuda is basically opposing positions. Rabbi Meir believes when you have a vav, it becomes one shvuah. Without a vav, separate shvuot. Rabbi Yehuda says just the opposite. When you have a vav in there, those are separate shvuot. And if you don't have a vav in there, then it's one big shvuah. And that might go to what you were asking before, which is how do you view the vav in these cases? According to Rabbi Yehuda, it's clear he views the vav as separating the items. It's a vav achiluk. Whereas Rabbi Meir is saying that the vav creates a chibur, where that it all becomes one unit. And for that reason, you have now a machloket, according to Shmuel, of opposing positions between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. On the other hand, Rabbi Yochanan Amar, hakol modim bivelo lecha shehu prat. Everybody agrees when you use the vav that it is a prat. Even Rabbi Meir agrees that it is a prat. Lo nechloku elo belo lecha. They only argue about lo lecha without a vav. So Rabbi Meir Omer Prat. Rabbi Meir says that's also a Prat. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Klal. And Rabbi Yehuda thinks that it is a Klal. Vezu Klalo Shol Rabbi Meir. How does Rabbi Meir have a Klal? If he believes Lo Lecha and Ve Lo Lecha are Pratim, then where is his Klal? Shvash in Lachem Biyodi. When he puts them all together in one word, where he makes a statement that includes all of them in one single unit, which is Lachem, that's considered to be one Shvua. It's clear that velo lecha is a prat according to Rabbi Yehuda. What Rabbi Yochanan says is not only is it a prat for Rabbi Yehuda, it's also a prat for Rabbi Meir. Then where is their machloket? Their machloket is in the case of lo lecha without a vav. How do I view that? Rabbi Meir says that's still a prat. And now Rabbi Yehuda says, no, that's already a klal. Now, of course, there are deficits in both explanations. The deficit in this explanation is almost ikar chasar min ha-sefer. Which is the fact that Rabbi Yehuda argues on Rabbi Meir with regards to without the vav, he should have at least mentioned that. We don't even see that in his position, and that is how we're going to now, the Gemara is going to explain how they came about these positions. But my kamiflegay, what is the machloka between Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan about this machloka Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir? Shmuel dayek mi braito. Shmuel's deal comes out of the braita we brought over here. Rabbi Yochanan dayik mi matnitin, and Rabbi Yochanan is midayik from our Mishnah. Shmuel dayik mi braita. Shmuel learns it from the braita. Migdi ka'amar Rabbi Yehuda ve lo lecha prato tave. And the fact that Rabbi Yehuda says ve lo lecha with the vav is a prat, Michlau Disham Eil Rabbi Meir Damar Klala Havi. That's because he's responding to what Rabbi Meir said. Rabbi Meir must have said Velo Lecha is a klal, and therefore he's responding to that and saying no. V'amarle Rabbi Yehuda Prata Havi, and he's saying I disagree with you. It is a prat, and that's what leads Shmuel to come up with this position that Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda argue with regards to vit when there's a vav in there. According to Rabbi Yochanan, they agree in that position. Shmuel says, look at the bright, though. The bright that clearly says Rabbi Yehuda is responding to Rabbi Meir's position and saying, you got it wrong. This is a prat. You thought that's a klal. That means that they're arguing about the vav. Rabbi Yochanan Amar, Tarvayu, the Rabbi Meir, Pratavi. Rabbi Yochanan says that both of them, whether there's a vav or not a vav, Rabbi Meir thinks they're a prat. V'amralei Rabbi Yehuda. And then Rabbi Yehuda says to them, V'velo lecha, modin lecha. And why does Rabbi Yehuda mention this one? He's saying, I agree with you only on V'velo lecha. V'velo lecha, on the other hand, without a vav, paligna lecha. I disagree with you. That's how Rabbi Yochanan learns the Braita. Ushmuel, Shmuel says, that's not a good way to read the Braita because, ad odile odie, liflogale ifluge. Before you mention the thing that you agree with Rabbi Meir, you should mention the item that he disagrees. It makes more sense in the Braita to mention the items where there is discord than there is to mention the items where we agree. Rabbi Yehuda come along and say, oh, I agree with you with regards to below the cha when it's above, but I disagree with you when there's no vav, and only mention the thing you agree with, mention the one you disagree with, that we can figure out the things that you agree with. You should have mentioned the disagreement. And therefore, Shmuel thinks that the simpler reading of the Braita is that Rabbi Yehuda argues with Rabbi Meir on with the vav, v'lo lecha, and from that we can also infer, as Rashi and the Baal Tosafot we learned before, that they also argue in the opposite direction, which is about lo lecha, whether Rabbi Meir thinks that that is a prat, and Rabbi Yehuda thinks that is a kalal. Rabbi Yochanan dayik mi matnitin. Rabbi Yochanan's position derives from our Mishnah, midikama Rabbi Meir, because in our Mishnah, Rabbi Meir says, shva she'en lachem biyadi, klala. Why does he give that as an example of a klal? The case where you group them all together. So that's a case where he says, shva she'en lachem biyadi, klala havi, michlal. From there you would infer v'lo lecha pratavi. Anything else that wasn't that would be a prat. That's whether with a vav or without a vav, it's going to be a prat. Disagadatcha v'lo lecha klolo hava. If you think that v'lo lecha with a vav is also a klal, then adamishma lan shvua she'en lachem biyadi. Before you tell us about that case, nishmein an shvua lo lecha v'lo lecha v'lo lecha. If you told us v'lo lecha what the vav is a klal, then we'd of course known that if you said shua she'en lachem biyadi is a klal. The fact that Rabbi Meir gave that as the example in the Mishnah seems to indicate that that solely is the klal in the Mishnah, and everything else is a prat. That means both with a vav, without a vav is a prat. So that's Rabbi Yochanan's diuk, and the Mishnah seems to favor his explanation over here. Ushmuel Amar, well, Shmuel has to deal with the Mishnah, same way Rabbi Yochanan had to deal with the Braita. Shmuel has to deal with the Mishnah. Amar kol omer v'lo lecha ki omer shua she'en lecha biyadi dami. So that when the Mishnah, when Rabbi Meir says shua she'en lecha biyadi is a klal, he's saying shua lo lecha v'lo lecha is similar to saying shua she'en lecha biyadi, and all of those are considered to be a klal. Ki'ilu, there's a chesure mechzera in the Mishnah. It's missing those words or those little piece there that would have told you that shua she'en lecha biyadi is not just about itself, but it's describing something else, which is shua lo lecha v'lo lecha v'lo lecha is also just like shua she'en lachem biyadi. That's the machloket here we have between Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan. Again, Shmuel believes that Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda argue on both issues, which is that Rabbi Meir believes that when you have a vav, it is a klal. When you don't have a vav, it is a prat. And Rabbi Yehuda believes just the opposite. Without a vav, it is a klal. With a vav, according to Rabbi Yehuda, it is a prat. Rabbi Yochanan says that when it has a vav, everybody agrees that it is a prat. But when it comes to lo lecha, without a vav, that's where the argument is. Rabbi Yehuda believes that that is a klal, whereas Rabbi Meir believes that that is also a prat. And the only case that's not a prat, according to Rabbi Meir, is shvua she'en lachem biyadi, which he gets out of our Mishnah. And so those are the machloket between Shmuel and Rabbi Yochanan over here. So now the Gemara brings our Mishnah, and our Mishnah presents a problem. Tnan, lo lecha, v'lo lecha, v'lo lecha. Our Mishnah gives an example, and in the Mishnah, it enumerates in the position of Rabbi Meir, who seemingly is the author of the Mishnah, because Stam Mishnah Rabbi Meir he. And in the Lashon of the Tanakhama, when it wants to give you an example, of a klal was Shua Shein Lechem Biyadi, and then it comes to give you the example of a prat, it says Shua Shein Lecha Biyadi, Vilo Lecha, Vilo Lecha. So it has a vav in there. That sounds very much like Rabbi Yochanan, who says that when you have a vav, Rabbi Meir agrees that it is a prat. So today, emend the Mishnah to read Lo Lecha, drop the vav. The Mishnah, whoever put in the Mishnah, made a mistake and he put in a vav. So just take the vav out. It's an easy mistake to make, meaning that if you saw a list like this, and it said lo lecha, lo lecha, lo lecha, without a vav, if you were grammatically going to correct it, you would have just put in the vav and said, you know what, it probably belongs in here. So there's a mistake in the Mishnah, which is that they put the vav in when they shouldn't have put the vav in under Rabbi Meir's position. Tashma, the problem is that the problem persists over and over again, and that's what the Gemara is going to ask. Emendations to the Mishnah, okay, when you find one mistake. When everything's written that way, maybe it's no longer a mistake, and you are the mistake, and not what's written in the Mishnah. Tashma, tainli pikadon utzumet yad vegazel vaveda. So there again, when it lists out the items, it says pikadon utzumet yad vegazel vaveda. Tnei. So again, emend the Mishnah to read tzumet yad gazel aveda. Just leave out the vav all along. Tashma. Then the last case, again, we said there were three different versions of this breakdown. Tainli chitim utzorim vekuzmim. Okay, again, the vav appears there, and seemingly this is the Tanakhama's position who's Rabbi Meir, which would indicate that vav is a prat, unlike what Shmuel says. Tnei se'orin kusmin, drop the vav. Gemara says, V'haitana kohachi shavish tani v'azil? This Tana just kept writing mistake after mistake after mistake. Now the truth is, it's all one mistake, which is that he put a vav in instead of leaving a vav out. In every case where there was a multiple list, he thought, oh, grammatically, there should be a vav when you have a list of a number of items. And he put the vav in. The truth is, it's the same mistake over and over again. But what the Gemara is noting is that we're loath to make changes to a Mishnah. If it's a one little item, you could say he made a mistake. There was something that went wrong over time in the transmission. When the mistake becomes so large in the Mishnah, then maybe the transmission is good and we have a problem in understanding of the Mishnah. And that's basically what the Gemara is saying at this point. But if you're going to have to change every single bava of the Mishnah, that already means that the Mishnah is probably right and we have to amend what we're thinking. Ella hamani rabihi. We can fix this problem, that is, to eliminate the thought that Rabbi Meir is the author of the Mishnah. If Rabbi Meir is the author of the Mishnah because it's Stam Mishnah Rabbi Meir and he's the Tanakhama, then you have a problem now, because Shmuel's position indicates that Rabbi Meir believes, based on the Braita, that when you have a vav there, that is considered to be a klal and not a prat. Yet in the Mishnah, the vav is there every time, and we're saying that that is a prat. So that's the problem. So Gemara answers, that's not a problem. We can make the authorship of the Mishnah Rabbi. Now that's another fair alternative. I mean, that Rabbi being the author of the Mishnah makes sense. Rabbi's the Mesadar Mishnah. So if Rabbi wants to put his own opinion in the Mishnah, he can do that as a Stam basis. If we say Stam Mishnah Rabbi Meir, so then either it's going to be Rabbi Meir, or it's going to be Rabbi who is the Mesadar Mishnah. Now, some rare cases, the Gemara will say that this Mishnah is authored by Dat Yechid. This is with a view of this Tano. But in general, we're going to assume that the Mishnayot are authored by the four people that we assume. Stam Mishnah Rabbi Meir, or Rabbi used the Mesadar Mishnah. So we got the point where Rabbi Meir was hard to explain in the Mishnah, we're based on Shmuel's understanding of Rabbi Meir. So the Gemara now jumps tracks and says, you know what, it's Rabbi. Damar. Because Rabbi believes, Lo Shna Kezayit Kezayit, Lo Shna Kezayit U Kezayit Pratahavi. It doesn't matter whether you have a Vav or don't have a Vav, it can be a prat. So now, what he's referring to is a case in the Gemara in Zvachim, where if a person says something about a korban, he has a machshava about a korban, that machshava makes the korban into pigul. Pigul happens when you have in mind at the time of one of the important avodot that you are going to eat this korban chutz lizmano, after the time period in which it is bound. If you have a machshavat pigul, then this korban is pigul, and if it's eaten, it'll be chayav echiyuv karet. On the other hand, there are other makshavot psulot. You can have other makshavot that will actually ruin the korban, but they will not result in a chiyuv karet. One of those is chutzlim komo. If you have a makshava that you're going to eat it outside of the place where you're entitled to eat it, not outside the time, but outside the place, that is posel the korban, but it does not result in a chiyuv karet. Alright, so now, one of the principles of pigul is that it can only become pigul if the only problem in the korban is the machshevet pigul. If the machshevet v'chutz l'zmano is the only problem in the korban, everything else is done correctly, then you have pigul. If there's another psul in the korban, then you are, do not have pigul, because that other psul makes it that you didn't do everything else in a proper fashion. And that ruins the korban, it makes it into a korban psul, and then you don't get to the pigul. Now, the question comes up when a person has multiple machshavot. He has a machshava in the beginning that he has a thought that I'm going to eat it chutz lizmano vechutz limkomo. Or I'm going to eat a kazayit chutz lizmano, kazayit chutz limkomo. So now, chutz limkomo would now make the korban pasul, and then you wouldn't have pigul anymore because you don't just have the problem of chutz lizmano. So the person did it in a way where he says, kazayit chutz lizmano, and then v'kazayit chutz limkomo, or he said kazayit chutz lizmano, kazayit chutz limkomo, with a vav or without a vav. Rabbi says in both of those cases, you have pigul. You have pigul because you separate them from each other. They're considered to be pratim, different pratim, and tfos lo shon rishon. The first thing you said is binding, the second thing that you said falls away. Now, if they were one unit, if they were considered to be one thing, then it wouldn't matter, because then in the same machshava, you had chutz lizmano, chutz limkomo, and you ruined the korban. In that way, and then you don't have pigol, you have chutz limkomo, you have a pasul korban, and fine, it's pasul, but it's not going to have the elevated status of chutz lizmano or pigol, which is correct. But if you could separate between the items, then you could say, when he made this statement, oh, we only pay attention to his first statement, we drop the rest of it, because it's all in one statement, you can't do that. A statement, when a person makes multiple level statements, we just take the first thing. That's again another machloket that we saw in Nidarim, and will come up in Zvachim as well, which is Tfos Lashon Rishon, Tfos Lashon Achron. When a person makes a statement, do we focus on their first part of the statement, the last thing they say? What are they thinking when they make these multiple level statements? So what Rabbi points out over here is that both Kizayit and Vikizayit, meaning a machshava that involves both of these items, are still considered to be pratim, they're considered to be separate statements, and since they are separate statements, we are grabbing your first statement, and your first statement was chutz lizmano. As long as you had chutz lizmano first, then it is pigol, and it'll be chayav karet, because the chutz minkomo gets dropped away. Rabbi now could be the author of our Mishnah, because he says, with a vav and without a vav, either one of those would be a prat. And so in our Mishnah, when it uses the vav, and says it is a prat, that could be authored by Rabbi. Now the truth is, you could have had Rabbi Yehuda be the author of our Mishnah, because Rabbi Yehuda also says that a vav is a prato, and so why not make Rabbi Yehuda the author of the Mishnah, rather than Rabbi? The answer to that question might be what I said before, which is, to make Rabbi Yehuda the default author of the Mishnah, is a less likely scenario, because Stam Mishnah Rabbi Meir, and Rabbi is the Mesader of Mishnah. Why would he make the Mishnah Rabbi Yehuda in a Stam basis? That's not the usual way that we have the Mishnah. And therefore, choosing Rabbi Yehuda to be the author of the Mishnah is a less likely scenario. It is a better option than Rabbi Meir for Shmuel, but we have even a better option, which is Rabbi. And that's why the Bali Tosfot note that we would pick it up. The other thing that might be the case is that the Mishnah says, a klal is shvua she'enlechem biyadi, a prat is with a vav. Now, for Rabbi Yehuda, according to Shmuel, without a vav is a klal. And therefore, that should have been mentioned as the klal. That is Rabbi Yochanan's criticism of Shmuel's position. And therefore, Rabbi Yehuda is a less likely candidate to be the author of the Mishnah. So that's how Shmuel deals with this problem. Given all this, the Bali Tosafot raised the question that you raised before, which is that Rabbi in the Gemara in Zvachim says, not only is Kazayit separate, Kazayit v'Kazayit is also separate. What you see from Rabbi's statement is that a Vav is a less likely separator, because he says, look, Kazayit Kazayit is more likely to be separate. Kazayit v'Kazayit, also that is considered to be separate, which means that your Hava Mina would be that a Vav is a connector, and a Vav is more likely to make him into a single unit rather than a separated unit. That's what the Bali Tosafot point out, and say that then that is almost the opposite of our Gemara. Our Gemara takes for granted that the Vav is the more likely separated item. Rabbi Yochanan, when he comes along and makes his statement, he says, oh, Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda agree by the Vav that it's separate. They argue about without a Vav. The way that we bring the Gemara from Tzvachim, it should have been just the opposite. Without a Vav, everybody agrees that it's separate. With a Vav, that's where the Machloket is. The Vav makes it less likely to be separated because a Vav is a Vav Chibur. And that would make them into a single unit. And for that reason, the Baal Tosfot say, Upesefer Yashan, Garas Hacha Kol HaSugya Ipcha. In the older Sfarim, we found that our Girsa in the Gemara was flipped completely. Everything you see in our Gemara, where it says Vav, was taken away, the Vav, and everything we say without a Vav is with a Vav. And in that way, it would comply with the Gemara in Tzvachim. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Hocha. And this is what Rabbi Yochanan said, Akol Modim Velo Lecha Shu Prat. Everybody agrees when there's no Vav, it is a Prat. Lo Nechleku Ela Biv Velo Lecha. And they only argue about the case of Velo Lecha, which then would match up with the Gemara in Tzvachim. Because Sinan Tnei, and then again, in our Mishnah, they say, put in the Girsa, Velo Lecha. Tnei Pigadon Utsu Met Yad. But that would mean that then our Mishnah would also be somewhat incorrect, because then the Havamina of the Gemara would be, quote the Mishnah without a Vav. The Gemara says, no, put the Vav in. Our Mishnah has the Vav in already. Now that might be because of the way that our Gemara is laid out. Maybe in that Gemara everything was the opposite, including the Mishnah. But you would have to make some serious alterations in the Girsa to get there. But the Baal Tosfot raised the problem because in the Gemara in Tzvachim it seems to be just the opposite of the logic that we have in our Gemara. Now, there are Rishonim who, in response to the Baal Tosfot, explain why our Gemara might be different. And that is because of what you're trying to do in the Gemara in Tzvachim versus what you're trying to do here. In the Gemara in Tzvachim, you have two separate machshavot. You have a machshava about pigo, and then a machshava about chutz le'mkomo. Now the question is, are they considered to be separate, or are they considered to be one issue? So in that situation, the vav is more likely to join them together. Without a vav, it's more likely to separate between them. But in our case over here, we're actually trying to do the opposite. We have the word shvu'ah at the beginning, and we're trying to determine whether the word shvu'ah applies to all the items along the way. So it actually might turn out to be just the opposite, which is that if you're trying to apply shvu'ah to more items in the statement, then the vav makes it more likely that the shvu'ah should apply to those individual items. We're trying to connect back to the original shvu'ah that's there. On the other hand, if you don't have a vav, you're going to say shvu'ah lecha. And then you're going to say, lecha. Well, if you're going to think now that that's a separate item, the lecha doesn't connect back to the shvu'ah. So it might turn out that logically, we're looking to do just the opposite of what we're doing in Tzvachim, and that's why, over here, it might turn out to be just the opposite. In Tzvachim, we're looking to figure out, how do we separate between the items? So there we're going to say, without a vav, it's more likely to be separate. With a vav, they're more likely to be one unit. But here, where you're trying to get the single word shvua that you stated in the beginning to apply to everything afterwards, then without a vav, it's more likely to be that it does not apply, that each thing is separate, so separate, that you can't get the word shvua to apply to those items. On the other hand, if you have a vav there, then it's more likely that the word shvua in the beginning applies not only to the first lecha, but to the second lecha and the third lecha. And then it will turn out that the logic is similar, but in our case, the necessity to join them or the application is the opposite of what you want to do in Tzvachim. In that way, they dismiss what the Baal Tosfot are saying and uphold our Girsa and Gemara. And that's very compelling because then that makes more sense, first of all, in the Girsa that we have, but also it makes more sense in the idea being that above, we'd be more likely to get the word shvua to apply to more items in the statement rather than without a vav. Right now, the Gemara moves on and says, okay, you amended the Mishnah all along trying to make it work. You gave up on that and said Rabbi is the author of the Mishnah. But now we have a statement from Rabbi Meir in the Mishnah, and that's really going to cause a problem, which is Tashma Mididei. Why don't you look at Rabbi Meir himself? Now here, the Rishonim are split as to whether the Gemara is jumping tracks, and now we left behind the Machloket Rabbi Yochanan and Shmuel, and we're just dealing with Rabbi Meir, qua Rabbi Meir. Or this is a continuation of the previous Gemara, and now it's a challenge within Rabbi Meir's position, saying, how can you say that Rabbi Meir really believes this? Look at the statement where we have Rabbi Meir's name tagged to it in the Mishnah. In the Mishnah it says, Rabbi Meir Omer, Afilu chita usora vikusemet chayav al kol achat v'achat. So if you say chita usora kusemet, you're chayav on all of them. Now here, the vav appears in each of the items. So now, if you think this is a continuation of the previous Gemara, the question of the Gemara is, why are there vavs over here? You just told me, okay, Rabbi's the author of our Mishnah, and that's why there are vavs in the Mishnah, because Rabbi believes that both with a vav and without a vav, there is a prat there. Rabbi Meir, according to Shmuel, believes that a vav is something that creates a klal. So why is Rabbi Meir now making a statement in our Mishnah with a vav, where he's saying that it's separate and it's a prat? So that's a question against Shmuel. And then some claim that even it's a question against Rabbi Yochanan over here, which is that why is Rabbi Meir bringing this as the prat? Why does he bring the prat as being without a vav, if that's what he believes against the position of Rabbi Yehuda? Then it would be more likely that if you want to see the chiddush of Rabbi Meir, bring it without a vav. That's the bigger chiddush, according to you, because that's where he argues on Rabbi Yehuda. So why did he bring it with a vav? So that would be a question both on Rabbi Yochanan and Shmuel, if you think it's continuing from the previous Gemara. If you don't think it's continuing from the previous Gemara, then you just, the question is, what is Rabbi Meir saying here about chita sora kusemet in the singular form? So the Gemara answers here, tnei chita sora kusemet, drop the vav. Okay, so here you make one emendation in the Mishnah, that's not so far-fetched. One emendation in the sheet of Rabbi Meir, drop the vav, and now it'll be more explicable according to both Rabbi Yochanan and Shmuel. Rabbi Yochanan, this is the key area where Rabbi Meir argues, and according to Shmuel, it's the only area where he thinks it's a prat, and therefore dropping the vavs helps you out. My afilu. Question then is, what does it mean, afilu? Rabbi Meir says, afilu chita usora kusemet. What does it mean, also this? Amar Rabbi Acha Brei D'Ravika, afilu chita bichlal chitim, useora bichlal sorim, vikusemet bichlal kusmin. So over here, you get a cryptic answer from the Gemara, which of course leads to a machloket rishonim as to how to explain what is being said over here. Here, the Gemara is saying that he specifically used the singular form of chita, sora, kusemet in contrast to the plural form. Rashi says that that means that if the claimant comes along and says, you owe me chita, meaning one chita, and he responds, I don't owe you chitim, that they're speaking about the same case, and they're speaking about the same item. The word chita can be used to mean one kernel of wheat, or chita can mean wheat in general, which means the plurality chitin, meaning that it means the same thing or synonymous with the word chitim. And that's true even in English, which is that if you use the word wheat, it can be referring to wheat in general, or it can be referring to wheat, the particular item or kernel of wheat that you're speaking about in the singular form. Now, that is because the word wheat is both singular and plural together. Now in Hebrew there is a difference. There's chita and chitin, which is there's a singular and a plural. But what the Gemara is pointing out is in the singular form, it is used also to mean the plural form. And therefore if you have a case where you have a claimant and a defendant, and one uses chita and one uses chitin, they're speaking about the same case. That's one way to deal with it. Another way to explain it is that even if you have multiple claims, this is what the Rimi Gash mentions, that even if you have multiple claims, which is he claims you owe me chita and then you owe me chitin. So what the Rimi Gash points out is that those two are two different claims. It's not one claim that the chita that he was talking about is the same chitim, but chita and chitim are two separate claims, and therefore, if the guy responds and says, I don't owe you chitim, he's responding to both of them, and then it'll actually be two different claims that he is responding to. So the word chita and chitim, even though they are similar in nature, they are considered separate if you bring them in the same case where the claimant says, you owe me chita and you owe me chitin. On this day you borrowed a chita, and that day you borrowed a chitin. Those are two separate claims that he's making. It's not the same item. That's the first explanation of the Rimi Gash. And then the second explanation, the Rimi Gash brings that the chiddush here is that if the person makes a claim for chitin, sorin, and kusmin, and the person's answer, shvash, ein biyadi, chita, sora, kusemet, they're not answering and saying, not even. I don't even have one kernel of wheat of yours. And I don't even have one kernel of kusemet, as if he makes a blanket denial about everything. But rather, we look at the denial of chita as if he said chitin, seorim, and kusmin. And therefore, it's a denial against each one of the claims that's made. Not a generic denial saying, I owe you not even a single kernel of any of these items. Which means that he's basically denying it as one big denial. And he'd only be chayav one shvua. Rather, we view it as if he said chitin, seorim, and kusmin. And therefore, it is as if he denied each one separately and chayav separately for each shvua that he took. So now, the Gemara moves on to the next piece of the Mishnah, which is Tainli Pikadon Utsumet Yad Gozel Vaveda Sheishli Biyadecha. Give me all of these different items that you are holding or that you are withholding from me. Give them back to me. And he denies them. Tein lechitin usi'orin. Am Rabbi Yochanan, pruta mikulam mitztarefet. When you have these items where they are multiple items, then a pruta mikulam, if you have a claim that adds up to pruta, in all of them mitztarefet, they can be joined together to create a claim over here. So now, the first thing you have is that the minimum claim in order for this to be shvata pikadon is a pruta. That's number one. Number two is, how do I get to the pruta? So in a situation where I have multiple claims, does the pruta have to be in each claim has to have its own pruta? Or if I add them all together and the totality of the claims is a pruta, then that is considered to be enough of a claim of a pruta. So that's what Rabbi Yochanan's chiddush is, that when I have multiple listed claims, that not each claim has to have a pruta worth, but together or all together, if they add up to a pruta, that's a claim that involves shvata pikadon. Pligi bar Rav Acha v'Ravina. So now we have a machloket amoraim about this position of Rabbi Yochanan. Chanamar aprate michayev aklal alei lo michayev. You're chayav on the pratim, not on the klal. V'chanamar aklal alei name michayev. That also on the klal, you are chayav. This is an argument both about the position of Rabbi Yochanan and our Mishnah. When our Mishnah says that the individual makes a claim, let's use the easiest one, which is chitin, sorin, and kusmin. Person comes with three claims against him, and the guy responds and says, shvua she'ein lecha biyadi, klum. In that case, we said that that's one response. He's only chayav once because he only has one denial. The other hand, if he says, shvua she'ein lecha biyadi, chitin, usorim, vekusmin, and he lists out all the items, then he's considered to say, shvua kol achat v'achat. Question now is, how many shvuot did he take? When he says chitin, sorin, and kusmin, you can view a shvua in two ways. Shvua she'in lecha biyadi means a generic statement. And then in addition to that, chitin, sorin, and kusmin. That means that he takes a generic denial, plus then he puts a colon and says all these items as well. That would mean that he actually took four shvuot in this case. One shvua denying it generically, and then an additional three shvuot which apply to the chitin, sorin, and kusmin that come afterwards. The other way to read it is, shvua she'in lecha biyadi is then defined by chitin, sorin, and kusmin, and there are only three shvuot over here. There's no klal. So that is the machloki between them as to whether, this is the way Rashi reads it, so whether there is also a klal that sits on top of the pratim that are mentioned. How many shvuot does he take when he makes a denial? Do we parse it in a way that says that his first statement is a generic denial, and then the pratim just add on? Or is the first statement really the introductory statement to get to the pratim afterwards, and therefore there's no generic shvua? Now, that will also have impact on Rabbi Yochanan here, because Rabbi Yochanan said that if you have a pruta mikulam, mitztarefet. If you have a pruta from each one of them, then they are mitztaref. The likelihood is that you only have one violation over here, because you have to mitztaref them into a pruta. The Rimigash brings, that means now when I take a shvua denying it, what do I need in order for it to be a denial? Is a denial when I say shvua that I don't have anything from you, plus I don't have chitin, zorin, and kusmin, and that way my denial encapsulated all of them together. And therefore I'm denying the pruta that you're claiming against me, and that's what makes you chayav. Or do we say that when you have a pruta mikulam, that when you deny each one of them separately, that's enough to be a denial that adds up to a pruta? Just like he made a claim that adds up to a pruta, your denial adds up to a pruta. So the question will be, within Rabbi Yochanan also, do you need to have a klal in the response, the shvua? Does it need to be a generic shvua in order to have the claim against you, which adds up to pruta, be valuable as a shvua? Or is it enough that you say, I don't have each of these items? Even though you're not going to be chayav three shvuot, because it's clear there's only one pruta of claim over here, but nevertheless, the three different shvuot now add up to a single shvua. So that's the question here. Is it enough that you deny each one of them individually, and that's okay, and now you'll be chayav once? Or you need to deny it generically in order for that to capture the composite of these three items being a pruta? Whereas Rashi reads the machloket vis-a-vis Rabbi Yochanan as saying that you need a kalal in order for Rabbi Yochanan's din to be true. And then the question is his din true by the pratim, because there is also a kalal there? Or is din only true when you respond with a kalal, because there you can subsume all the items together? So that's the view of Rashi as opposed to the Rimigash. So Gemara says, V'hatani Rabbi Chiya. So from our Mishnah, you're not going to be able to clarify this issue. So they go to the Braitot. Rabbi Chiya is a Talmid of Rabbi, and Rabbi Chiya and Rabbi Shaya are the authors of the Braitot with the most integrity to them. And if we quote a braita from Chaim Rabbi Shaya, that's a serious question on Amora, and we will take it seriously in our interpretation of the Mishnah. So if Rabbi, now we're bringing things from Rabbi Chia, which are interpretations of the Mishnah that we saw, and now we're trying to make sense of them. And how do we make sense of them in the face of these positions of the Amoraim? Which is, Tani Rabbi Chia, Hareikan Chameshus Rei Chataot. Over here you have 15 Chataot. Vimita, and if you're right, Esrim Avyan. There are 20. So again here, let's take a step back. As the Bayit Tosafot point out here, if you're speaking about Chataot, we're not speaking about Shvuat HaPikadon. Shvuat HaPikadon, the Korban is an Asham. If you're speaking about Chataot, this goes back to the previous Perek, Shvuat HaEidut. Shvuat HaEidut results in a Korban Chatat. In Shvuat HaEidut, in the Mishnah, we had the same layout that we had here in Shvuat HaPikadon, which is you had a case where the person denies knowing testimony about multiple items. And over there we had the same setup. If he makes a single denial, then he's only chayav for once. If he denies knowing each item, then he might be chayav for the denial in each separate case. So now, what Rabbi Chia says about that is, you actually have 15 chatot. Now, the first case that's brought, both here and the Mishnah Shvuat HaEidut, it's a case where there are five claimants. So there are five claimants, and each one of them is saying, you owe me chitim, silrim, and kusmin. 5 times 3 is 15. So what Rabbi Chia says is, if he makes a denial of chitin, sorin, and kusmin to these five claimants, he's going to result in a case of 15 chatot, 3 times 5. Now, what the question of the Gemara is, according to the Manda Amar that says, when you take a shvua, shein decha biyadi, chitin, sorin, and kusmin, that over there you believe that not only are there 3 shvuot, there's an additional klal, which is shvua, shein decha biyadi, you really have 4 shvuot. If that's the case, you have 4 shvuot times 5 people, you have 20 chatot. So the question comes from the fact that Rabbi Chia says there are 15 chatot. Vimita, it should have said Esrin Avyon. Hai Tana, the Prate Kachoshiv, the Klalei Kol Kachoshiv. Rabbi Chia's Braita, when they're enumerating there, they're only counting the Pratim that land up with chatot. They're not counting the Klalim. So that's just a way to deal with it and say, yeah, in Okanami, there would have been 20, but he's only enumerating the Pratim and not the Klalim. Vatani Rabbi Chia, now you have a bigger problem, which is Rabbi Chia now says, Harikan Esrim Chatot. There is a case of 20 Chatot. So now this could be a question on both positions. This could be a question on the position that believes there is a Klal, because he said before in the Braita that he's only enumerating the Pratim, not the Klalim. Now all of a sudden you have 20, the only way to get to 20 is to include the Klalim, which means that he is including the Klalim, and if that's the case, it just doesn't work out. For you, how are you going to explain this? And also there's a question on the party who says that you don't count the Klal, because here he has 20. The only way to get to 20 is if you count the Klal. The answer of the Gemara is, Haya Pikadon Utsumet Yad V'Gazel V'Aveda. That's going on the next piece of the Mishnah. So you have the five claimants. Five claimants are not asking for chitin, sorin, and kusmin. Five claimants are asking for pikadon, sumetiyad, guzzle, and aveda, which are 4 items. So if you do that, that's 4 times 5. That's 20. So you explain Rabbi Chia's position there, referencing in the Braita to that part of the Mishnah. We have 5 claimants making claims about 4 different types of claims. Not 4 different types of items, but 4 different claim types, which is pikadon, sumetiyad, guzzle, and aveda. And that way you solve both problems. According to the one who says that we don't count the klal, you're not counting the klal, you're only counting the pratim. According to the one who says that the braita is only enumerating the pratim, here you have a way to get to 20 with only counting the pratim, which is using the 4 instead of using the 3. Because it'll be 3 times 5, will get you 15, and 4 times 5 will get you 20. Or, the other way, if you don't think it's a question on the one who says you count the klal, then his answer for Rabbi Chia would be different, which is Rabbi Chia in one case is counting the klal, which is the 20, in one case he's not counting the klal, and that is the 15. By minei rova mi Rav Nachman, ayu chamishat tovim oto, there were 5 claimants coming to claim against him, v'amiru lo tein lanu pikadon utzumet yad v'gozel v'aveda sheyesh lanu biyadecha. And they said him, give us all these different items that you have in your hand. Amar le'achad me'en, if he says to one of them, shvua shen decha biyadi pikadon utzumet yad gozel v'aveda, and then he goes on to say, velo decha, velo decha, velo decha, velo decha, mahu. What's the din? So what we have here is an interesting mixture in his response. His response includes both a pirut, a detailing of what he's denying, which is that he's denying each one of the items separately, which should make him chayav a korban on each one of the items separately. But then after that, on the additional claimants, He doesn't do that. On the additional claimants, he says, velo lecha, velo lecha, velo lecha. When he adds on the velo lecha for the additional claimants, what is he doing? Is he transposing what he said to the first claimant and saying it applies to you, you, and you, which means he's making four denials on each claimant? Or is he saying he's making four denials to the first one, and then afterward he's making a generic denial to each one after? Velo lecha, I deny to you, and deny to you, deny to you. It's not what he said to the first guy. He's just making a generic denial to the others. Obviously, the difference between them will be how many denials you have over here. Achada mechayev. He is chayav for one. Odilma kochada v'chada mechayev. Or is he chayav on each one of them? Meaning, do you have 20 violations over here? Which is that he detailed them for the first guy, and then when he said below the chada, transposes it to everybody else. Which means that it's 4 times 5 is 20. Or is he only chayav one for each of the additional people that he added? That means he'll be chayav 4 for the first guy with 4 different denials, and then an additional 4 for the 4 denials after that, which were just generic denials, you'll be chayav 8. So that's the question here. Is he chayav 8, or is he chayav 20 in this case? So now, Gemara says, Tashma, the Tani Rabbi Chiya are Eikan Esrim Chataot. The Rabbi Chiya, similar that we brought before, says that you are chayav 20 chataot, hechidami. What's the case? Either Parish, if he enumerates it each time, he says, Shvua, she'en lecha b'yadi, not a pikado, not a tzumet yad, not a guzzle, not a veda. Then he turns to the second guy and says the same thing. And says, Shvua, she'en lecha b'yadi, pikado, gezel, tzumet yad, and a veda. Then what is Rabbi Chiya teaching us? There's no chiddush. Then Rabbi Chiya minyono, atalesh minan, you can count that up yourself. You don't need it, Rabbi Chiya, to add it up for you because there's no chiddush over there. He denies to each one of them 4 separate items to 5 people. All you have to do is multiply 4 times 5, you get 20. Why does Rabbi Chiya and the Braita need to tell you 20 chatot? El alav, it must be the lo parish. It's a case where he did not define it out. He said, Shwa, she'en lecha b'yadi, lo pikadon, sumet yad, gezel v'aveda. And then he said, velo lecha, velo lecha, velo lecha, shma mina, prat ave. From that you see that it is considered to be a prat, meaning that when you add on the lo lecha, it transposes what you said to the first guy to each subsequent guy afterwards, and that's how you get 20 chatot. And that would be the chiddush. Now back to the Mishnah, the end of the Mishnah. Nasto patita et biti. Father of the woman comes and makes a claim that you either raped or seduced my daughter and you owe me money. There we saw machloket in the Mishnah as to whether you have a claim or not. The major issue is he making a claim for kanas? Or is he making a claim for the monetary matter? Rabbi Shimon said there is no claim for shvata bigadon here because you're dealing with kanas. And moda bikanas is patur. So that means that your denial over here is not the only way you can get out of this. You could just admit to it. And when you admit to it, you're going to be patur anyway. So your denial is not really doing anything because the only way to become chayav afterwards is to admit. And once you admit, you're also patur. On the other hand, the Rabbanan said that knas is only not the only thing that comes with onus and mifateh. I mean, anes and mifateh is chayav boshet and begam, which are monetary claims. And therefore, these chayav for the denial of the monetary claims. So Gemara here wants to understand the machloket between Rabbi Shimon and the Chachamim. I'm Rabbi Chiya bar Abba, I'm Rabbi Yochanan, my time is the Rabbi Shimon. What's the reason by Rabbi Shimon's position that he believes that there is no shvata pikadon here? The Rabbanan have a good claim. There's knas, boshet, and begam. Okay, knas, you're right. That you can't make a claim and won't make a shvata pikadon. But what about the boshet and begam? That the chamim say are monetary claim. What happens to that for Rabbi Shimon? Hoil v'ikar knas hu toveya. The major thing that he's focused on is the knas. So Rabbi Shimon, he's basically saying, I want my kanas. Yeah, there is boshet begam, but he's focused on the kanas. And since he's focused on that major item, that's what we focus on as well. That's what they claim is Rabbi Shimon's position. Amar Ava Mashal de Rabbi Shimon Lama Adavar Dumeh. What is Rabbi Shimon's thing similar to? L'adam shemar l'chabero, ten lichitim v'sorim v'kusmim sheyesh lebiyadecha. Guy Games makes a claim and says, give me the wheat, barley, and spelt that you have in your hand. Amar lo, shwa, she'en lecha b'yadi, chitin. And then he takes the shwa, only denying the chitin. V'eshtekach, de chitin udoletle. And then we figure out that he was telling the truth with regards to the chitin. He didn't have a claim against the chitin. Ha'asorim v'kusimim, itle. But he does have a claim against the v'kusorim v'kusimim, the patur. There is patur. The chishtaba, achitin, akushta mishtaba. Because the shwa that he took is a true or fair shwa. So here, what is he saying? He's saying that you have 3 claims against the guy. The 3 claims are, you owe me knas, boshet, and pegam. The guy comes along and says, only I'm denying the fact that I owe you knas. But he is not addressing the boshet and the pegam. That's the mashal that Rava brings. Rava says, the guy makes a claim for chitim tzarim and kusmin, and then he says, I deny the chitim. We find out that his denial of the chitim is true, but the tzarim and kusmin are not true. Over there, you're not chayav shvat ha-bigadon, because your only denial was true. The shvat that you took was absolutely true. The problem with that is that Rava is creating a case that has nothing to do with our case over here, and that's what Amalei Abaye. Abaye says, mi domi. How can you compare the cases? His denial of the chitin is separate from his claim of the sorim and kusmin, or his response to the sorim and kusmin. Here, he's denying everything in one shot. Abaye asked the question from one perspective, but I think you can ask it from the other perspective as well. I think he's saying the same thing, which is, Abaye says, listen, in the case where you deny owing chitin, then you're not saying anything about the kusmin and se'orim. The only thing he denies is the chitim. The se'orim and kusmin he's not addressing at all. So that case, he's just addressing the chitim, not the se'orim and kusmin. In our case, when he denies owing the knas, by definition, he's also denying owing the boshet and begam. If he denies owing knas, means he's saying, I didn't rape her, I didn't seduce her. He didn't rape her and seduce her. His denial is not just about the knas. His denial is also about boshet and begam. They come as a package. You can't have it that he's patur from the knas and he's chayav in the boshet and begam. It's either he's chayav in all three of them or he's patur in all three of them. By chitin and tzorin and kusmin, you could separate the items out. One you could be that he owes him and the others he doesn't. It's able to separate. Each item is an independent item. They're not correlated with each other. That's one way to formulate it. The other way, I think, to formulate the question of Abaye is to say that the denial of kanas in the case of Onis and Mifateh means that you're saying, I was not Manes, I was not Mifateh, because that Shua was a denial under oath that was incorrect, but that his denial of the Chitim is true. And therefore, when you deny the kanas, it's as if you implicitly are denying the Boshet and Pagam as well. Now, you could be either directly, that you're denying them, or what Rabbi is suggesting is indirectly, which is, once you deny the knas, then you're definitely saying, I was ma'anes and mifateh, and that means by definition you also don't owe the boshet begam. So it could be that he's addressing it directly, which is, when you say you don't own knas, basically you're saying, I also don't owe boshet begam. Or you could say, when you say I don't own knas, that means I wasn't a ma'anes and mifateh, and an outcrop of that is that I also don't owe you the boshet begam. But either way, when you address the knas, you're addressing the boshet begam. But the chitim, sorim, and kusmin, when you address the chitim, it doesn't mean you're addressing the sorim and kusmin. You could try to imply something from it, but the fact is that when you address the chitim, it has nothing to do with the kusmin and seorim. Rabbi says, but if you want to compare it, halo dami ala omer lechaveiro, this is more similar to a case like this. Ten li chitim v'sorim v'kusmin sheyesh li biyadecha, shva shein lecha biyadei klal. You have nothing here. So he takes the shvah denying everything. Turns out he told the truth about the chitim, but he was lying about the sorim kusmim. You're going to be chayav over there for that shvah, because that shvah was a denial under oath that was incorrect. Yes, you denied one thing correctly, but the other two things you denied incorrectly. And so too over here. By the case of knas, that denial is not meaningful, but the non-meaningful aspect of the knas also has a meaning with regards to the boshet and begam, and that does have meaning, and that denial does have impact, and you're going to be chayav for that. Okiyat Ravin Amar Rabbi Yochanan, the Divi Rabbi Shimon Knas Hu Toveya Velo Boshet Begam. The difference between Rabbi Shimon and the Chachamim is what he thinks you're making the claim for. Before, the explanation relied on the fact, that's what Rabbi Chir Bava says in Rabbi Yochanan, that he makes a claim for all three, but the primary claim is on the Knas. That's not true. The answer is that he's making a claim on Kanas, period. Nothing on Boshet and Begam. Rab Divrei Chachamim, Afet Boshet and Begam Utobea. According to Chachamim, he also makes a claim for the Boshet and Begam. But Maika Miflige, what are they arguing about? Amar Papa, Rab Shimon Savar, Lo Shavik Inish Mide De Kaitz, Betova Mide De Lo Kaitz. A person will not give up something that is a fixed payment for something that is an amorphous payment. When it comes to the Kanas, if he makes a claim for the Kanas, it's a fixed amount. He knows what that amount is going into the case. And he says, I may as well make the claim for the fixed 50, because that, if I'm right, I'm just going to get the 50. There's nothing to discuss. Then the boshet begam require investigation as to the value of the claim. Not only are you making a claim, but then you need to evaluate the claim to determine what the value of that claim is. He says, you know what? I'm going to go after the certain piece of this. and then I'll try to get the other parts later. So what he does is he comes in and he makes the claim for the kanas, saying, listen, if I can get this taken care of, then I get an amount, I've got the money in hand, I know exactly what I'm going to get. The Boshe Begam, I'm going to be fighting about this for a long time, trying to figure out what the amount is for the Boshe Begam. So I'm just going to make a claim for the kanas, and then if he denies that, then we can work on everything else. So that's what he says, that a person doesn't leave the kanas and go deal with Boshe Begam. He goes after the kanas first, and only the kanas, because that's something that is defined. On the other hand, Rabbanon Savre, lo shavik mide dechimode be lo miftar, tove mide dechimode be miftar. The Chachamim say, that type of strategy is very risky. Because if you make a claim for the kanas, if he's modi the kanas, he's patur. So yeah, you're going after the fixed number, but you have a big risk that the guy admits that he did it, and then you have nothing. Because he's patur if he's modi the kanas. So a guy's not going to go after a claim where he could lose the whole claim if the defendant just admits to being at fault in this case. So he's going to go after the Boshe Begam that even if he admits, he's still going to have to pay afterwards. So therefore he can't get out of the payment. So that's why he'll go after Boshe Begam. It seems from the Chachamim, a little bit, that they're saying not only does he make a claim for Boshe Begam, but he doesn't make a claim for Kanas. You could argue that they're saying that it's for all of them together because the Modeh B'Kanas might wipe it out, but you still have the Boshe Begam. It's not clear if the Chachamim say he's making a claim for all three of them, or he's just making a claim for Boshe Begam. But either way, the Boshe Begam makes it that there's a monetary claim over here. Monetary claim is subject to Shvata Pikadon. For Rabbi Shimon, you're making only a claim against Kanas. By Kanas, there is no Shvata Pikadon because Modeh B'Kanas is Patur, and therefore the denial here is not a denial that necessarily has monetary impact, because you could just admit to it, and it'll be Patur anyway. And for that reason, Rabbi Shimon thinks that you do not get a Shvata Pikadon, or there's no Chiyuv of Shvata Pikadon when you deny the Kanas. With that, we end Shvata Pikadon, Adran Alach, Shvata Pikadon. So now we begin Shvata Dayanim. Shvata Dayanim is going to be actually the Shvua that we know in the Torah, which is Modeh B'Miksat. The truth is that there are other Shvuot Midoraita, and that already the Rishonim ask over here, why is it that the Mishnah focuses only on Modeh B'Miksat and not the other Shvuot Midoraita? The answer to that could be multi-layered. Either they're just saying Shvata Dayanim, which we're now going to explain is Modeh B'Miksat, not saying that's the only Shvata Dayanim, but that's the one we're about to embark on and explain. Or you can say that Shvata Dayanim focuses on Modeh B'Miksat because that's the Shvua in the Torah that is the most explicit. And since that's the most explicit Shvua in the Torah, when it comes to Shvat Eid Echad, which is also Doraita, that's implied in the Torah, it's not explicit. When it comes to Shvata Shomrim, that is more like Shvata Pikadon than it is like Shvata Dayanim, because the Shvata of the Shomrim is a denial of owing money to the individual, and therefore it mostly falls under Shvata Pikadon, not under Shvata Dayanim, and that's why Shvata Dayanim focuses on Modeh B'Miksat. So now, Shvata Dayanim is a Shvua that an individual becomes chayav for in court because of the nature of his response to a claim against him. Now, Balei Tosfot say, why doesn't the Mishnah over here say, oh, it applies to Nashim, Nashim, you know that formula that we've seen in all the Mishnayot till now, why doesn't it give you that formula? So the Tosfot says, Mishnah's had enough with that. The only reason it brought it by Shvat Bitoy, Shvat Shav, and by Shvat Apikadon was to contrast it with Shvat Aidut. But in all those cases, you really didn't need it. You only needed it because it contrasts with Shvat Aidut. She says they had enough of that. Shvata Dayanim is clear that it applies to everybody who's going to come to court and take a Shvua. Anashim, Nashim, whoever it is, it's going to apply to them. And therefore, there's no reason to have to write out Anashim, Nashim. It's clear that that's the case. And we already had enough contrasts to Shvata Eidut, that we don't need another Mishnah with a contrast in it. So now the case of Shvata Dayanim is Ta'ana Shtei Kesef. The claim has to be a minimum of 2 Kesef. And the admission has to have a value of a pruta. Over here, we're going to see in the Gemara Machlok between Rav and Shmuel, which is how much the claim has to be. Does the claim 2 kesef and the admission is a pruta? Or is the claim 2 kesef plus a pruta and the admission is a pruta? That's not clear from the Mishnah. That'll be a Machlok Amorim, Rav and Shmuel and the Gemara. Now, Shtei kesef, Rashi says over here, Shtei kesef refer to ma'ot. Because the word shtei is lashon nikeva. And say if it's a lashon nikeva, it can't be referring to a dinar, which is your standard coin of kesef would have been a dinar. The reason that you can't say that is dinar is zachar, and then it should have said shnei kesef. So it's clear here that if he uses the nikeva, the female conjugation, that means it's referring to a coin of silver, which is an actively used coin that is Lashon Nekeva. And that, he claims, is the ma'ah, which is the shtei kesef over here. There are six ma'ah in a dinar. So that means that shtei kesef, or two ma'ah, is a third of a dinar. That's the nature of the claim that you have over here. The hoda'ah is a shaveh pruta. A pruta is a copper coin. What is the relationship between a pruta and the ma'ah or the dinar? One ma'ah is worth two pundion. One pundion is worth two isar. And then every isar is worth eight prutot. From that you come out that a ma'ah is two pidyon, which is the equivalent of four isar, which is the equivalent of 32 prutot. And that means that a ma'ah is equal to 32 prutot, or a pruta against the claim of shtei kesef is 1/32 of a ma'ah, or 1/64 of the claim, when you admit to a pruta versus shtei kesef. So that is the monetary numbers that are here. And now we lay out a principle, which is, if the admission has nothing to do with the claim, then that's not called modem mimiksat. Ketzad, give us examples. Shtei kesef libili biyadecha. You owe me two coins, two ma'a kesef. Ein lebecha yavdi ela pruta. The guy admits that he only has a pruta. Patur. In that case, he is patur. Why should he be patur? He made a claim for two ma'a kesef, and the guy admits to a pruta. The difference is in the coinage. Ma'a is kesef, is silver. Pruta is nechoshet, is copper. So he's making a claim for silver, and the guy is responding in copper. So that makes it that the claim and the admission have nothing to do with each other. The problem is, later on in the Mishnah is going to say, if you make a claim for silver and then admit in copper, that you are chayav, because you're asking about coins. When we get there, I'll come back and reflect on this part of the Mishnah, which means that this part of the Mishnah clearly has to be understood differently than the latter part of the Mishnah. Shtei kesef upruta libi adecha. The guy says, you have two kesef plus a pruta with me. Ein lecha biyadi ela pruta. There he is chayav. Because there his admission deals with the claim. His pruta is an admission to the pruta that he claimed as well. So the shtei kesef plus pruta, he admits to a pruta, that gives you modeh b'miksat, because he agrees about the pruta aspect over here. Mana li biyadecha, guy says, you owe me 100 zuz, 100 dinar, ein lecha biyadi, you have nothing on me, patur. That's a case of kofer bakol. He's denying the whole claim. Over there, you're not chayav e shvua. See later in the perek that changes. That is at the time of the Mishnah. Later on, there's an introduction of what's called a shvuat heseit, which is a shvuat derabanan that was later on added of time of Rav Nachman, which is that even by kofer akol, you have to take a shvua because people were starting to make the claim of kofer bakol because they knew they didn't have to take a shvua. So in order to prevent people from using that as an out, they added in a shua teseit. But as far as the Mishnah is concerned, you're patur from the shua of modeh b'miksat. Mana libi yadecha, yomi 100 zuz, in the b'chabadi, ela 50 dinar. He admits that he owes them 50, which is half of the claim. Chayav, that's a case of modeh b'miksat, and your chayav a shua. If his admission triggers a shua, then the guy is not only going to have to pay it, but he's going to have to shua to substantiate it. And that will prevent them from lying. On the other hand, if he doesn't have to take a shua, he just pays whatever he says, because he's the only thing that's mechayev over here is his admission, and then he walks away from the case, and that's it. He says, I'm done with the case. Mane la'aba biyadecha. My father lent you 100 zuz. Ein lebecha biyadi ela nun dinar. The defendant says, I owe you 50. You're right. Your father lent me 50. He did not lend me 100. Patur. In that case, it's not classified as modeh miksat. Mipnei shehu kemeshiv aveda. That's the same thing as returning an aveda. So now that has two levels to it. One level to that is the fact that over here, when you have a claim, what is the reason the Gemara says that by modeh b'miksat you have to take a shvua, and by kofer akol you don't take a shvua? The Gemara is going to say that a person really would like to deny the whole claim, but he is too scared to do that, or person is not so brazen as to deny an entire loan that was given to him when the creditor is standing there. The Rashi claims that the reason he doesn't take the shvua is because this guy did him a tova. Since he did something nice to him and lent him the money, he's too embarrassed to deny the whole thing in front of him. He really would like to, but he can't because he's too embarrassed. That's why he then says to himself, all right, I have to admit to some of it. But why not admit to the whole thing? The problem is he doesn't have enough money to pay back the whole thing. So what he thinks in his head is, you know what? I'll admit to a portion of it. That way I'm not being kafui tov, because I'm admitting to a portion to it. I'm also not putting myself in a predicament where I can't pay it back, because whatever I'm admitting to, I will be able to pay back. And then later on, I'll make up the rest, or I'll pay back the rest. So he comes to a motor mixer, according to Rashi, because he's too embarrassed to do a kofar bakol, because the guy did him a tova. He's too scared to admit to the whole thing, because he can't pay it. So what he's going to do is come to a compromised position and admit to a portion of it. So the Torah, Yarad L'Sof Torato, the Torah understands that mentality. It says, take a shvua. We put a shvua on him to say, listen, your motive in Mikzah, there's a lot of suspicion about why your motive in Mikzah here. Take a shvua to justify your position. And in that way, we'll dissuade him from lying about motive in Mikzah. That's the view of Rashi. The Balei Tosafot, or the Rabbeinu Tam, there are actually multiple Balei Tosafot and reasoning in the Balei Tosafot and Kuf Zayin in Bava Kamma, and also in Daf Dalet in Bava Metzia. So over there, there's a machlok at Rashi and Tosafot as actually how this works. One of the things the Balei Tosafot would mention is that the reason a person is not willing to be kofar bakol in front of the claimant is not because he did him a tova, but because people don't lie to the face of the person who knows the truth. If people will lie when the other person doesn't know the information. They will not lie when the guy standing opposite them knows the absolute truth, and then therefore they won't lie. So he won't be kofar bakol, because that's an absolute lie to the person who knows the truth, who knows that the claim is fully there and that he lent him money. And for that reason, he's not going to be kofar bakol. I should admit to the whole thing, he doesn't have the money. So what he does is he does a modem and mix-up. He does a partial admission, and that way he justifies himself that he's not really lying to this individual, because he's admitting to a portion of it, and therefore he would be willing to be modem and mix-up. Once he makes that claim, we throw a shvua at him to say, listen, we know you're playing games here to get out of the problem. Take a shvua to justify your position. That's the reasoning behind the shvua of the Torah. So now, when we come to the case over here, where the guy comes with a claim from his father. When he comes with a claim from his father, he's missing both aspects. According to Rashi, he's missing the tova that he would have done, because the tova was his father that it did for him. This son who's coming to make the claim, he didn't do him the tova, it was his father who did him the tova. And therefore, he will not be embarrassed to be kofar bakol. It would be just as likely that he'll deny the whole claim as denying a portion of the claim. Since he could have denied the whole claim and made it a kofar bakol, then Migo, when he makes a partial claim, we believe him. Because Migo, that he could have denied the whole thing and been fine, the fact that he didn't do that and admitted to a portion of it, it's Kameshi Baveda. It's as if he's giving him back free money, because he didn't have to do that. Or, for the Balei Tosafot, he will lie and be kofar bakol, because the son doesn't know the truth. The son wasn't the one who lent him the money, it was the father. Since the son doesn't know the truth, he's totally fine lying and being kofar bakol, and that means kofar bakol is an option to him. If it's an option to him, then when he admits to owing half, Migo, that he could have been denied the whole thing, we're going to believe him when he says half, and that is Kameshi Baveda. Now Rashi takes another leap in this, and says, go to the Gemara in Gittin. The Gemara in Gittin says that when you're Meshi Baveda, you don't have to take a shvua. Mipnei tikkun olam. Because if we make a person take a shvua when he turns an aveda, then people aren't going to return avedot anymore. They're going to be trapped into a shvua. They're not going to want to do that. So what do? They eliminated the shvua. So Rashi says the same thing over here. Just like by the Meshiv Aveda in Kitin for Tikkun Olam, they eliminated the shvua. So over here, there's no shvua because he's a Meshiv Aveda. A Meshiv Aveda, they terminated the shvua. They didn't ask for a shvua. The Rashi over here does not like Rashi's explanation, because he says the Meshiv Aveda here and the Meshiv Aveda there are totally different. The Meshiv Aveda over there really should take a shvua, midoraita. Tikkun Olam says don't take the shvua. Over here, the Meshiv Aveda doesn't need to take a shvua, because there's no modem and mixit anymore. There's no modem and mixit in contrast to kofar bakol. He can be kofar bakol, and therefore he has a migo to be believed over here, and there's no reason for him to take a shvua. And the reason he doesn't take a shvua is because he's a Meshiv Aveda. He has a migo backing him up, and that's why he doesn't take the shvua over here, not because it's tikkun olam Meshiv Aveda. We don't take it so literally that it's exactly like Meshiv Aveda. It's similar to Meshiv Aveda, just in name, which is that he's returning him money. It's like found money, because the guy could have denied the whole thing. In fact, they admitted to half of it. He should just take the half and be happy, because he could have denied the whole thing. Right, so that's that piece of the Mishnah. Manali biyadecha amar lo hein. The guy says, you owe me 100 zuz? And he responds, yes, I do. Machar amar lo tnei oli. Next day he comes and says, pay me the money you admitted to yesterday. He says, Natati l'flecha, I already gave it to you. Patur. Then he is patur. That person's not considered to be a moda mimiksa. That person is a kofer bakol, in a sense. He made a claim originally. He admitted to the claim. He now comes with that same claim. He says, I already paid you back. So now, he's a kofer bakol, denying any claim. He's patur from a shvua. In the chabi yodi, if he says, you have no claim against me, then he is chayav. Now, as opposed to other words of chayav in the Mishnah, the other chayav in the Mishnah were chayav shvua or patur mishvua. This chayav over here actually means he's chayav money. That is because he admitted at first to owing the money. Then the next day the guy comes back and says, I'll pay me the money. He says, you have no claim against me. And Gemara is going to say, when you say, in the chabiyadi klim, means lo liviti, means lo parati. If you didn't borrow the money, then you also didn't pay it back. That means that this guy also admits that he didn't pay it back. Now we have a deem that he admitted to saying that he owed the money, and now he's denying owing the money. That is a person who is uksak kafran, is chayav. Chayav not a shwa, chayav to pay the money back, because he admitted to the claim, and he makes no counterclaim saying I already paid it back, because he denies the claim in the next interaction between them. Mane lebi yadecha, yomi 100 zuz, amar lo hein, he agrees to it. Al titneu li el beidim. Only return it to me if there are edim witnessing the fact that you're returning it to me. The machar amar lo titneu li. The next morning he says, pay me back the money you admitted to me yesterday. He says, netativ lecha. He says, I gave it to you already. Chayav, mibnei shetzarich litno beidim. His saying that he returned it is no value over here because the guy agreed that he only wanted it back with edim. And if he defied him and gave it back without edim, that claim is not a valid claim now. And therefore he is chayav to pay because we assume he didn't repay it. But he says, I repaid it without edim. We don't believe him. We say you didn't repay it at all because you knew that you had this requirement to repay it with edim. Litra zav yeshli biyadecha. Yomi litra is a measurement, a weight. You have that much gold that I had given over to you. Einecha biyadi ala litra kesef. The guy responds and says, no, you only have a litra worth of silver, patur. Then you are patur because he's making a claim for gold and the guy's admitting to silver. That's not a motive in miksat. That's not anything that has to do with the claim. So even though zav's worth a lot more and kesef is worth less, so it's as if he made a partial admission, you would think it's a motive miksat. It's missing the fact that the claim and the hodah have nothing to do with each other. The claim's in gold, the hodah is in silver. Dina zav yeshli biyadecha. He says, you owe me a gold coin. In the chabiyadi ala dinar kesef. He says that you only have a dinar kesef, utrisit, upundiot. Or, and you have a trisit, and a pundiot, upruta, chayav. In that case, he is chayav, shakol min batbea achat. The claim here is not for the metallic type of currency, it's for currency in general. He's saying to me, you owe me a dinar zahav. A dinar zahav, we're going to see in the Gemara later on, is about 24 or 25 dinar a kesef. And if that's the case, then a translation of dinar zahav means that you owe me 24 dinar a kesef. No, I only owe you a dinar kesef, and I owe you a trisit and a pundiot and a puta. In essence, you're admitting to part of the claim. It's the equivalent of saying, you owe me 100 shekel. The other guy says, no, I only owe you 25. The 125 could be represented by different coins or different types of currency. But in the end, there's one claim here. It's a claim for currency. And if you make a claim for currency and a partial admission in currency, you have a case of motive mix-up. The problem with this is going back to that case in the Mishnah early on, where he said that I made a claim for you for shtei kesef, and the guy answers, I only have a pruta. When there we said it's not mimin atana, it's two kesef and pruta. Why don't we say the same thing over there? It's all currency. So Rashi differentiates the cases and said over there we're speaking about weight. Over here it's speaking about currency. Over there he's saying you owe me two kesef worth of something. And the guy says I only owe you a pruta worth of something. There they're speaking about it in weight form, not in currency form. Here in the latter part of the Mishnah they're speaking about it in the terms of currency. And that's why over here the hodah is mimin atana, as opposed to that earlier case in the Mishnah, which is not that the hodah is mimin atana. That's one way to deal with it. The other way to deal with it is whether you're focused on the currency, which is the amount, or are you focused on the metal or the metallic type of claim that you have. Is the claim on kesef, or is the claim on shtei ma'ah? So the fact that he mentioned over there shtei kesef, and not the coin, seems to be that he's focused on the metallic nature of the item and not the actual coin. If he wanted to say a coin, he should have said shtei ma'ah or shtei ma'ah kesef. That way he would have known it was currency. The fact that he ignores the ma'ah and just says shtei kesef, that's an indication that his claim is not focused on the currency, but focused on the kesef. Kor tvua yili biyadecha, yomi a kor, which is 30 sa'ah worth of tvua, indecha biyadi aletech kitiyot. I only owe you a letech is half of a kor, which is 15 sa'ah, but he also changes what he owes him to legumes. The guy's making a claim for grain, and the guy's responding, are you half the amount? And it's legumes. Patur, that's not modiv mimiksat, because legumes are not a subset of tvua. On the other hand, kor peirot biyadecha, if he makes a claim for him, you have a kor, 30 sa'ah worth of peirot that you owe me, and then he responds, I only owe you a letech, which is 15 sa'ah, half the amount, but I owe you legumes, chayav. There is modem mimiksat, shekitnit bichlal peirot. Legumes are a subset of peirot. When a person uses the term peirot, he means it more generically. He doesn't just mean fruit. He means things that grow on trees, on other things. Grain is distinct and differentiated. Grain is something that you harvest completely out of the ground, whereas fruits are something that you pick off the tree or you remove from whatever it is, the beans that you remove from the stalk that they're on. So in that case, peirot are all a category that has subsumed within them kitniot. But the tvua does not match up with that, and if you say tvua, kitnik, legumes are a totally different category. Tano chitim, behodulo bisorim, makes a claim for wheat, and he admits to barley, patur. The hodah is not mimina tana. Rabban Gamliel michayev. In that case, Rabbi Gamliel is michayev, because Rabbi Gamliel, we're going to see in the Gemara, has a much different view about what is tana and hodah. Atuain lechaveiro bikade shemen. Person makes a claim for barrels of oil. Vehodolo b'kankanim, and he admits about the barrels. Admonomer, ho vehodolo b'miktzat, miminatana yishava. He admitted to a portion of it. The guy, when he comes and makes a claim for barrels of oil, he has really two claims over here. You owe me the barrels, and you owe me the oil that is inside the barrels. So that's what Admon says, and therefore when you deny owing the oil, but admit to owing the barrels, you're modeh b'miktzat. Because you're agreeing to the part of the claim about the barrels, just not about what's inside of them. But you're admitting to the barrels. That's a modem mixat. When a guy says, you owe me this many barrels of oil, he's not speaking about the barrels. Barrels are the measurement of oil that he owes him. And therefore, when you admit to owing the barrels and not the oil, you're not admitting to what he's claiming. He's claiming oil, and you're admitting to barrels. They have nothing to do with each other. And therefore, there is no claim. Amar Rabban Gamliel, I think that Admon makes more sense over here. The truth is that, of course, Rabbi Gamliel believes that. We just saw before that Rabbi Gamliel thinks that chita and sora are considered to be modeh b'miksat. Of course he's going to believe that kadesh shemen and kankanim are considered to be modeh b'miksat, where he's admitting to a pitcher in the face of a barrel, and kad is a bigger form of a kankan. But Rabbi Gamliel believes that that always works. So what's the chiddush of Rabbi Gamliel? The answer might be that Rabbi Gamliel is saying even the chachamim should agree in this case. I for sure think that it's that way, like Admon. But the chachamim should agree to Admon in this case. Tano kelim v'karkot. He made a claim for him again for utensils and land. Behodo v'kelim v'kafar v'karkot. He admits to owing the utensils but denies the karka. V'karkot v'kafar v'kelim. Or he admits owing the land but not the utensils. Patur, you don't have modem mimiksat over here. The reason being is that karka is mufka from modem mimiksat. Karka is not in the parsha of modem mimiksat, and therefore whatever you say about the karka is not relevant to the case. Hodem mimiksat a karkot, so that means again here, if he admits to owing half the karka, he's still patur from modem mimiksat, because his modem mimiksat is in the land portion, which has no relevance by modem mimiksat. Bimiksat a kelim, if he admits to owing a portion of the utensils, Chayav, then he's a modeh b'miksat. And there he takes a shvua on the whole thing because the nichasim she'en lehem achrayut, items that do not have recourse associated with them, which are non-real property, zokakim et nichasim she'esh lehem achrayut, they bring along, they pull along nichasim that do have recourse on them, which is property, real property, lishavaleim, to take a shvua. So a shvua is only applicable by kelim. It's not applicable by karka. Yet, if you have to take a shvua on the kelim, you can also now pull in the karka and also take a shvua on them. The difference being that kelim are not achrayut because people do not rely on them. Karka doesn't walk, doesn't move. When people want collateral, they want karka because that's the most static, stationary, value-holding item that you can use as collateral. Without him, the guy can sell, he can use, he can get rid of, and then you don't have any collateral. So that's why they're called achrayut and ein achrayut, and they bring along the shvua. Ein nishbaim altanat cheresh shoteh v'katan. If the claimant is someone who is not a bardat, or not someone who is of age, then you don't have to respond to that with a shvua. Ein mashbaim et katan. We don't force a katan to take a shvua. Avon nishbaim the katan ulekdesh. But you might have to take a shvua to a katan and ekdesh, and then you'll have to explain who's making the claim then. If we just said before, a katan can't make a claim that results in a shvua, how can you have over here then take a shvua towards a katan? So that'll have to be resolved in the Gemara. And again, the issue of karka, we'll see in the Gemara as well, which is there's a klal upratim klal that we learned in the Gemara in Baba Kama and Perek Merubah, that karka is precluded from the parshia of modeh b'miktzat. Right now the Gemara begins. Heichat mashbin le. How do we have him take a shvua? Amar Rabbi Yehuda Marav, mashbin oto b'shvua hamura b'Torah. We make him take the shvua that's written in the Torah, which is dichtiv. Why Avram Avinu, when he has Eved Abraham, comes to take a shvua, and Avram is sending him out to get a wife for Yitzchak, he makes him take a shvua. And when he takes the shvua, it says, v'ashpiyacha b'ashem elukei ha-shamayim. So you see, the way that you take the shvua is you use what seemingly is the shame Hashem, and also over there he makes them put sim yadchad takad yirechi, put your hand by my thigh or by my loins. Chazal tell us that's because he had the mitzvah brit milah and he wanted him to be holding on to something that was a chetza shel mitzvah. So from this you learn that there are two things that you need for the shvua, seemingly according to what Rav is saying over here, which is from Avram Avinu, you need Shem Hashem, the Shem HaMiuchad, and you need Nikitat Chefetz. You have to be holding on to a Chefetz of Mitzvah. And that presents us with a problem. Amalei Ravi and Rashi, come on. The way that Rav is explaining this over here, our Mishnah, that's the Shvua, then who's that like? K'Rav Chanina Baridi, Damar Binan Shem HaMiuchad. That's like Rav Chanina Baridi we saw in the previous parak, who argued with the Chachamim, as to whether you need Shem HaMiuchad to be Chayav in a Shvua, or is it enough that you have a kinoi? And only Rabbi Chanina Bar Idi was the one who said that you need Shem HaMiuchad only. The Chachamim said a kinoi, but that won't reconcile with what Rav is saying over here. Rav is saying you need a Shem Elokei HaShemayim, which is Yudkei Vavkei. So Amalei, Afilu Teimer Rabbonon. Here, the Rabbanon agree, the Amrei the kinoi, because they use a kinoi. Wait a minute. If they're using a kinoi, then how can you reconcile with Rav's position that he's bringing from Abraham the example of what a shvua is? There it says, the Shem Hashem, the Shem HaMiuchad. So the answer is, v'nafkamina tzorech letvusei chefza biyodei. Now Rav is saying not about the lashon ha-shvua, but rather about the way the shvua is taken. So yes, you can even take a shvua with a kinoi. But Rav is saying, go to Abraham to figure out how to take a shvua, just like Abraham made Eliezer, or Eved Abraham, hold the chefetz of a mitzvah, which is the brit milah, so too the person taking this shvua in court is going to have to take it with the chefetz of mitzvah in his hand. So even the Rabbanan could agree. What Rav is saying that we learned from Abraham is not about the language of the shvua, rather about the nature of the shvua, how it's taken, what's the context, what is the framework. It has to be taken with holding a chefetz of mitzvah in your hand. The problem with that, that's already raised by the Baal HaTosafot, which is, if you have the limud from Avraham Avinu, how can you only take a partial limud? If you're learning shvua from there, then you should learn it completely from there. And learn it both that you need the Shem HaMiuchad and you need Nikitat Chefetz. How is it that the Chachamim can learn one item from there and not the other? They're going to learn Nikitat Chefetz, but they're not going to learn Shem HaMiuchad.
So the Rosh actually brings down two answers to this problem. The first one is, V'yesh lamar de Rabbanan Savrei, kevin diktiv elokei ha-shamayim, hainu nami kinoi. That's also considered to be a kinoi, and not a Shem HaMiuchad. Rabbi Chanina Baidi Zavrei, kevin diktiv, Hashem elokei ha-shamayim, a Shem HaMiuchad, klomar, Hashem Shehu Elokei HaShemayim.
Hashem Elokei HaShemayim is a kinui. He's really taking the Shvua Elokei HaShemayim, and Abram's just describing who the Elokei HaShemayim is. And therefore the Chachamim believe over there that the Elokei HaShemayim is the Shvua, and the Hashem Elokei HaShemayim is not the Shem Hashem, but rather the kinui by which he's going to take the Shvua. On the other hand, Rabbi Chanina Bar Idi says, no, Hashem Elokei HaShemayim
is telling you that the Shem HaMiyuchad, Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei, who is the Elokei HaShamayim, that's the one you're taking the Shua. But it's not saying that the Shua is Be'Elokei HaShamayim. It's a Shua B'Shem HaShem of Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei and Elokei HaShamayim. It's just a defining term or an adjective describing who the Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei is. So that's one answer he gives. Inami, the other answer he gives, Adabina Nan Kutei Chetza, Labde Ofina Miotam. We don't learn it out from there. Ela Asmachta Ba'almahi. It is just an Asmachta. V'takanat Chachamim Latil Ema Ala Nishba. And the reason for instituting it is to put more fear in the person taking a Shua, that what they're doing is significant and serious. And the way for them to feel that is to take something that's considered holy, something that we wouldn't touch otherwise except for its unique purpose, something that is held in high esteem, and bring that out. That's why they give him a Sefer Torah or Chefet Shel Mitzvah. And then the Shliach Beit Din makes you take a Shua, whether it's with the Shem HaMiyuchad or with a Kinui. That answer is actually very helpful, because it answers a question that the Baalei HaTosafot raised over here, which is, why isn't there Nikitat Chefetz by Shvuat HaBitui and Shvuat HaEidut? Because first of all, the Shvua that Eliezer Ben Avraham was taking with Abraham was actually a Shvuat Bitui. So if that's the case, then we should also have Nikitat Chefetz by Shvuat Bitui. Tosafot leaves that as a Tzorachiyun, that they're similar to Shvuat HaDayanim, where you can be Mushma Mipi Acherim, and therefore it should also have a requirement of Nikitat Chefetz. The Rosh, in answering the question here, says it's only an Asmachta Nikitat Chefetz. We don't really learn it from Avram Avinu. And the Chachamim only applied it by Shvuat HaDayanim, not by other Shvuot, like Shvuat Bitui and Shvuat HaEidut. And that way he answers the question that was raised by the Baalei HaTosafot. Uke de Rava. Similar to Rava. Dama Rava, Haidayinu da'ashva ba'ashem elokei ha'shamayim, naseh kemishtah b'dvar mishnah v'chuzer. Someone who demands that the individual take a shvua b'dashem ha'miyuchad, it's as if he made a mistake in a mishnah, and you pull it back. This goes back to the Mishnayot in Sanhedrin, where if a dayan makes a mistake, depending on what type of mistake it is, we determine what to do in the case. If it's a mistake in a mishnah, an explicit mishnah, we reverse the case. We don't say that the dayan has to stick with his psak and now pay out of pocket to make restitution to the party that he did wrong to. But rather, we say it's such an obvious thing that we reverse the case, and we discuss there the Rishonim as to why that is by Toei B'Dvar Mishnah. And then the Gemara later on says about that Toei B'Dvar Mishnah, it's not only about a Mishnah, but any memra from the Amum Ra'im that is clear. And here you have Rav, who made a clear statement that you need to keep that Chefetz and you don't need the Shema Miyuchad. And over here, the guy did just the opposite. He made him use the Shem HaMiyuchad and didn't do Nikitat Chefetz. So once you do that, that's equivalent of Tav B'Dvar Mishnah, because the Gemara in Sanhedrin said that if you're Toen and an Amora statement, especially like Rav, who sometimes is Tanul Polig, then for sure, if you make a mistake in explicit statement of Rav, then you're going to reverse the case. Gamra Papai Dino Da Ashpa B'Tfilin, a Dayan who makes the guy hold Tfilin in his hand, Nasik Misha Tav B'Dvar Mishnah B'Chuzer. Again, it's as if you made a mistake in an explicit statement of an Amora, and you're going to take it back. Because you need a Sefer Torah and not Tfilin. Now, the Baalei HaTosafot questioned that. They say, by Avram Avinu, he made Eliezer take it b'milah. How do you know you need a Sefer Torah? Why isn't Tfilin good enough? So, Amrinu b'samuch, the Gemara says later on that only a Talmud Chacham does it with Tfilin, not a regular person. So that's one answer. Or Inami came in that Dailon Itztavu Yoterabi Kasefer Torah Legabayu. Avram Avinu had no other mitzvah to choose from. So he chose the Milah. That was the most precious mitzvah. Today, our most precious thing is the Sefer Torah. So if we want to equate with Avraham, here for him, Milah is the same as Sefer Torah for us. And that's why we use the Sefer Torah, because of Avraham. V'hilchato kavati d'rova. The halacha is like Rava. V'hilchato kavati d'rova papa. The halacha is like Rava, that if you make a mistake and you make him use Shem HaMiyuchad and don't have Nikitat Chefetz, that is a Tal B'Dvar Mishnah. Whereas for a papa, if you use Tfilin, even though that you shouldn't do that, nevertheless, the halach is not like him, and you don't have to be Tal B'Dvar Mishnah. It's not as if he made a mistake in a Mishnah. The fact is that by Rava, the halach is like him, because you need to keep that chefetz, you have to hold on to the item. That's what gives us the seriousness of the Shvuah. And without it, it's not a serious Shvuah, even though you use the Shem HaMiyuchad. In the end, he's holding something that's holy. May not be a Sefer Torah, it's tefillin, but it's still something that's holy. Shvua me'umad. When you take this shvua, you have to take it standing. Talmud Chacham Yushab. If he's a Talmud Chacham, we let him sit down because of Kavod HaTorah, we let him sit down. Shvua b'Sefer Torah. The right way to take a shvua is holding a Sefer Torah. Talmud Chacham v'chatchila b'tefillin. Talmud Chacham can use tefillin. That's either because of Talmud Chacham. For him, tefillin are like a Sefer Torah, because he gives the same reverence to tefillin that he gives to a Sefer Torah, and seriousness to tefillin and a Sefer Torah, and therefore when he holds tefillin, it's the equivalent of him holding a Sefer Torah. Or, out of kavod for the Talmud Chacham, we only make him hold tefillin, not a Sefer Torah, because we believe he's going to tell the truth, and that he doesn't need a Sefer Torah to put him in that position where he's going to tell the truth. Now, with regards to Nikita Tchefetz, why tefillin worked for the Talmud Chacham and not for the Am Haaretz, it might be that the yachas of the Talmud Chacham to the tefillin is different than the Am Haaretz. The tefillin are supposed to be transformative in the way that they affect the individual. That means when a person wears tefillin, they become serious. They don't have schok, kalut rosh, they don't have esech adat. There are all these requirements of focus and being in a state of mind that reflects the tefillin. And the Am Haaretz don't really understand that. They see tefillin, they put them on, and they still have esech adat, and they joke around, and they do things with their tefillin on. They don't take it so seriously. And therefore, for a Talmud Chacham, tefillin have the same din as a Sefer Torah. And I would go as far as to say, I did not see this in anyone, that maybe the tefillin that we're speaking about here is the Talmud Chacham who's wearing tefillin on anyway. He's coming into Beit Din with his tefillin on, and now he can use that as his Nikitat Chefetz because he wears tefillin all day. It is something that affects him all the time, and it is for him a transformative item that makes it that he's a different person, and therefore he can use the tefillin. For the Am Haaretz, who maybe doesn't even put them on in those times of the Goanim at all, or he only puts it on for small periods of time, they don't hold it in that high esteem like that of a Sefer Torah. And therefore we use the Sefer Torah for them because they treat it differently than the tefillin. They don't give the same kavod and the same reverence to the tefillin. And so an Am Haaretz, yes, b'diavad, if he uses tefillin, will say that it's good because it's like a Sefer Torah, it has parshiot, parshiot that are chelik min haTorah, and therefore we'll say that it was b'diavad good. On the other hand, l'chatchila, we're going to ask him to do it with the Sefer Torah. But for the Talmud Chacham, who treats the tefillin in that manner, even l'chatchila, we're going to allow him to use the tefillin, because for him, taking the tefillah with tefillin on is no different than taking it with a Sefer Torah. They have the same impact in terms of the kavod, reverence, and the way that the person approaches them to eliminate kalud rosh and hesach adat, they're equal between a Sefer Torah and tefillin for a Talmud Chacham, and therefore we don't differentiate in terms of the shua for the Nikita Tchefetz. That does raise issues with other types of chefetzei mitzvah, like for instance a mezuzah. Can you use a mezuzah as a Nikita Tchefetz? And that might relate to either the fact that they have parshiot, like parshiot Torah, so maybe it works. Or maybe it's different than Sefer Torah and tefillin because a mezuzah only gets its kedusha. This is what the grid says in Rishimat Shirim, only gets its kedusha when it's up on the wall. But it doesn't have that shei mezuzah when it's just simply parchment that is written. And therefore, if it were to gain the status of a chefetz of mitzvah, it'd have to be up on the door. And therefore, it can't be nikitat chefetz because it's already on the door. And he brings the phraseology of the Rambam that tefillin and Sefer Torah have inherent kedusha, whereas a mezuzah gains its kedusha because of the chiyuv to put it up on a house that is chayav in a mezuzah. And for that reason, you need ibud lishma with regards to tefillin in a Sefer Torah, but you don't need ibud lishma for a mezuzah. Or you could argue that a mezuzah doesn't come bound with the type of reverence that you have or transformative nature that you have with tefillin and Sefer Torah, and therefore mezuzah is not considered to be a chetzah shel mitzvah that can fill in as a nikitat chefetz in this case. You need something much more, quote-unquote, serious, like a Sefer Torah and tefillin. Well, the Rashi ala Torah in Reshit Chav Dalet, in this parshia, says that mezuzah can work as a nikitat chefetz, whether Rashi means you can actually hold a mezuzah that's detached from the wall, or means that you're holding the mezuzah while it's attached to the wall, it's not clear, but it seems that Rashi argues on this view that the grid explains in the Shita Tarambam, and he believes that Nikita Chayfetz would work by a mezuzah. Now Rashi says something over here which has serious impact, which is Ubedoroteinu bitlu arishonim shvua deoraita. And our generation, the Rishonim already, Rishonim probably doesn't mean in his generation, the Gaonim before us, eliminated the Shvua Deoraita withholding a Sefer Torah. The Fishin Aseh, Gadol, V'tignul Egzor Alav, the Fishin Onsha Gadol. Because the punishment for a Shvua Sheker is so great that it's too risky. People are lying, are going to lie under oath. And here they're holding a Sefer Torah. They're using the Shema Miuchad. You really got a serious issue on your hand, and the punishments are severe. Punishments are not only for the person who takes the Shvua Sheker, even for the Am as a whole. It affects them. And therefore, they did away with the Shvua. And Rabbi Nachman Unai says, similar to what the Gemara speaks about with regards to capital punishment and prosecuting certain cases. When the murderers got to be too many, they stopped having capital punishment. They stopped sitting in capital cases. Because it became too crazy for them to deal with. There were too many murderers running around for them to deal with it in a way of capital punishment. And similarly over here, there were too many people lying under oath when it's a serious issue, and therefore they eliminated it. And then, Vaha, Amran, and then instead they put, Pitiknul Ixoralav Arur Basara. And instead they put into place this Arur that is done in front of 10 people. Vaha Amran. And a proof to this is what we saw earlier in the previous perek, which is Arur Bo Shvua. The Lashon of Arur can also be a form of Shvua. And so the Shvua is coming through this Arur. And if you look in Rav Nachmanai Gaon, and I'll send it out to you later, he speaks about the process by which they actually did this Arur. Which is Nimnu Bate Dinim Lashvia B'Sefer Torah. They already stopped using a Sefer Torah, Kedamrina and Shvua B'Sefer Torah, Tamidei Chachamim L'Tchila B'Tfilin. Be'echi Mashbi'in Anlei. What is the type of Shvua that we do? Amar Yehuda B'Shvua Amura B'Torah. By Shvuat Sheker, or Shvuat with the Shem Hashem, the punishment doesn't only affect the person taking the Shvua, but the whole world. They were swearing falsely and causing problems for the world. Therefore, nimnuum lashviya shvua b'torah b'salku koyigar. They stopped having people take a shvua with a sefer Torah, and they removed it completely. And it quotes the Gemara in Sota that we noted, Mishrabu haratzchanim b'teila ela egla rufa. Once the ratzchanim were too many, they got rid of egla rufa. Avkan batlu lashviya b'torah. So too over here, when it became that people were lying too many times under oath, they got rid of the shvua. Ma'itkinu. So then what did they replace it with? They bring shofarot and they blow them before the person who is going to take the oath. They put him in excommunication and they make a gzerah. You so-and-so, im gazauta, kein b'chein, v'im atam meshim b'davar hazeh. If you are lying about this, arur oto aish, you should be cursed. Kein b'chein otana klalot, and all of these klalot should come to you. Betokim b'shofarot b'fanav, and then we blow the shofarot. Shem echazev o shem ganav o shem gazav. He's lying about stealing or theft. Talei klala bo levadov ha'ilakei alam kulo. That the curses should affect him and not the whole world. Umatzulo siyua mimakom zeh. And they found a proof to this from Shvuot daf lamid vav, where it says that la Allah shehi shvua. That the word Allah means shvua is synonymous with shvua. Shemar v'yaveh oto ba'Allah. And everybody accepted this from him. Now the two yeshivot in Bavel both have this practice. Since it's no longer a shvua d'oraita, and they're using this arur, they also now said that you can take a shvua on karka, because it's not really a shvua d'oraita, it's a arur d'rabbonon, and therefore they applied it both to karka and metaltalin, and that we know from many times, the Bali Tosafot note, that the Geonim changed the rules here and said that we do take shvuot on karka, and also that metaltalin are considered to be collateral, and a person can collect out of metaltalin, and that has to do with the change in the nature of ownership and wealth that was stored by individuals. And then in the Tshuvot, Rav Nachmanai, he also brings down that they do it on Monday and Thursday when there are a lot of people there, and then they have, the case here is a woman, hold the Sefer Torah, so that they'll be afraid and embarrassed, and they'll do the right thing. So it's a pressure tactic for the person to realize the severity and seriousness of what is going on here, but they do it in a manner that imposes on the individual a certain amount of seriousness about the situation, including lighting candles, doing it in a dark room, blowing the shofar, making them hold the Sefer Torah, and doing it in a public forum. You're trying to put pressure on the individual so they understand the severity and seriousness by which we're asking them to take a quote-unquote shvuah, but it's not a shvuah anymore, but that this arur is going to apply to them. In the Rambam, in Hilchot Shvuot, Perek Yud Aleph, Halacha Chof, you find that the Raivad over there also brings a similar idea. It says, "Achar shetiknu agionim she'em bishvuatenu lo shem velo kinoi, ein bahem lo chomesh velo asham she'enam ela inyan klalot lachoteh." That once they drop the shem Hashem and the kinoi, they also drop the necessity for nikita tchefetz. Although the truth is that from Rav Nachman Aigon, it sounds like originally in one case that he says that they drop the need for the Sefer Torah. But in another case, he seems to indicate that they still use the Sefer Torah and to keep that chepetz even in the face of an arur. And so there you have some dissonance amongst the Rishonim and Geonim as to whether the practice of a Nikita chepetz survives the elimination of a Shua B'Shem Hashem, because is it only connected to Shua B'Shem Hashem that you need Nikita chepetz, or can Nikita chepetz also have impact in the case of an arur? And you see from the Rav Nachman Aigon and the Tshuvot that there is a value where it gives the person a sense of the seriousness and severity of the arur that is being imposed upon them at that time. And that difference also might be apparent in Rashi and the Raivad, because Rashi seems to say that it's still alive, the concept of the Shvuah, and the way that we do it, we just don't use a Shvuah, we rather use an arur and Allah. Whereas the Raivad thinks that they eliminated everything completely, including the Nikita Tchefetz. Okay, we're going to stop here on the last line of Lamed Chet Amud Bet.